24 hours ago, Kyle Draper and I sat right here at the Golden One Center, getting ready for the Kings' first game of the new year, full of anticipation and hope. And you, sitting right where you're sitting right now, Kyle, as you know, I'm sure you remember, you said, it was just about 24 hours ago exactly, you said, I want off the roller coaster. Remember that?
I did say that,
want off the roller coaster. Well, you can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave because we're back on the roller coaster after last night. What happened?
I'm not on the roller coaster, Whitey.
Oh, my
goodness. I'm actually feeling A-OK about my Sacramento Kings team because here's the problem, and we'll talk about this over the next 3.5 hours. I understand, Kings fans, you're frustrated. Bad loss yesterday. But if I'm correct, did they lose last year to Charlotte at home? Here at Golden One Center.
Okay.
Bad loss, right?
Yeah.
Last year was the best season in the last 20. We were sunshine and rainbows and lollipops and everything was okay. Now all of a sudden you have some bad losses and, oh, what's going on with this team? This is unacceptable and all that. But hold on. Last year at this time, we were ready to erect a statue of Mike Brown. Last year at this time, Sacramento, it was like the 60s and 70s. We were flower children in the street. Mm-hmm. People were just, la, la, la. It's so great to be a Kings fan. Now, all of a sudden, everybody want to jump off a cliff. Everybody want to make trades and changes. I'm not doing that. We're okay. It's a bad loss, yes. But trust me, I can go down probably 25 teams in the NBA, 26 teams in the NBA who have had bad losses. Charlotte, they've won a couple of games. It's not like they were 0-30 coming in.
They lost 11 in a row. But that, you know that.
What's his name? Lost 27-28 in a row. Detroit. And they beat Toronto.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it happens. And so I'm done with the road. That's
okay.
Hey, if you want to live your life like that, Whitey, go for it. If you want to ride or die
I
up
don't
and down
want to.
With this team, go for it. But my mental health, it's mental health awareness night here
it is.
At Golden.
It
my
is.
Mental health, I got to protect it. Mm-hmm. I can't be going up and down. I just can't do it anymore.
The last 44 seconds of the game last night, honestly, I think were 44 of the worst seconds the Kings have had since they came to Sacramento. Honestly, they had a winnable game. It's like, yeah, you know, I was sitting there next to Chris last night as you were doing your TV stuff, and I was thinking, this is really bad, but if you win, you win. It's okay. And it looked like they were gonna, and then the last 44 seconds, total meltdown. So that's hard to take, especially when, and I understand everything you said about, hey, don't forget last year was great, and they're about where they were last year. But when Mike Brown, after the game, says, he used the word alarming, our execution down the stretch and our sense of urgency on both sides of the ball was alarming. It wasn't good. The coach used the word alarming. So we can be on the roller coaster or not, but whether we are or not, I think we have to look at this team and say, something needs to be addressed. As a high flyer said last night in the postgame, that needs to be addressed.
But something needed to be addressed before last night's game.
Uh-huh.
Like just because you beat Memphis and Atlanta, everything's not all great and fine and everything. Like, the Kings are who they were 24 hours ago. Nothing has changed in my mind about this team. Are they a championship contender? No, not right now. If they would have beat Charlotte last night, would I have said anything differently? No. And so if they beat Orlando tonight, are we going to say everything's fine and dandy? All is right in the world? Orlando's a good team, Whitey. And so that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to just react, every game like this. I can't do it. I can't. I was on with Matt Barnes last night on a post-game show, and we talked about Mike Brown's reaction. If you're Mike Brown, either you're yelling and screaming at your team or you're taking the approach like, guys, you're having a real talk with them. You're keeping an even keel. And that's where I'm at now. I blew up the spot a week or two ago when they lost to Portland, when they lost to Boston. I can't do that after every bad loss, Whitey. That's all I'm saying.
I
can't do it
that.
After. I got to keep things in perspective. Right now, the Sacramento Kings are in fifth place in the Western Conference.
They're closer to – I'm sorry.
No, but, but you can say that about Clippers, Pelicans, Dallas, Phoenix, Lakers, Golden State. That's what I'm saying. Like, outside of Minnesota, OKC, and Denver – it's a crapshoot. The Kings are where we thought they'd be at this point.
I just think that if you want to be competitive in the West and you want to take advantage of the opportunities that are there, then a game like last night is, it's not a must win. Because to your point, it's like they got another game tonight. De'Aaron Fox said, we have another game tonight. But it's really important to take advantage of those very winnable games against that's I know you know all this, so I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But you got in the last week, you got two losses to bad teams that are shorthanded. That's you can get upset, emotional about it or not. If you're going to be rational about it, still, I think you got to say, huh, well, that's not ideal, right?
No, it's definitely not ideal. But was it ideal last year? And they still won 48 games. And they still pushed Golden State to a game seven.
Were they as inconsistent last year as they are this year?
No.
I don't think so.
No, but what's their record? Is their record better right now than it was a season ago, if I'm correct? So that's what I'm saying. Like, sure, the losses are bad, but they also beat OKC twice.
Mm-hmm.
Can we give them credit for that? They beat
we
Denver.
Did at the time. I mean,
They beat Minnesota at Minnesota. So they have good wins, and they got bad losses. I understand as a fan we're upset. But now if they beat Orlando, is everything fine? Like, my problem is, and I'm guilty of this just like anybody else, but I'm trying to keep an even keel now. The swings, it's not just a roller coaster. One day, we're Western Conference Finals contenders. The next day, we need to make a big trade and go get Zach Lee. We can't live like that, Sacramento Kings fans. We still got 50 games left to go in the season. If we're going to react like this to every bad loss, we're in some trouble. We're not going to make it. Our mental health and emotional health, it's not going to be good. I want to enjoy this season. I don't want to. Here's the problem, Whitey. Here is the problem. In today's day and age, when a team does bad or good, first thing I do, we do, people do, run to social media. And first of all, I shouldn't do that. When the Kings lose, I should turn off social media because I'm looking at some of these accounts that a lot of you out there follow, and it's some of the most asinine stuff I've seen. And so I'm not going to be a part of that anymore, Whitey. I'm not going to be one minute, you know what, we're the greatest team in the world, the next minute Mike Brown can't coach, because that's what's happening out there in the world right now, and we can't allow that. It was a bad loss, yes, but there's plenty of time left in the season.
Yeah, but the problem is, while all that is for the most part true, the Kings and Kings fans have higher expectations this year, and every time they start to look like they've made progress over last year, record notwithstanding, because there's other ways you can judge whether a team has improved besides what's the record compared to last year. Every time it looks like, wow, all right, they figured some things out, then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, what was that? I mean, that's – and you know it. I know you know it, and I understand what you're saying, but that was a really bad loss last night after two impressive wins. So – that's the problem is, well, wait, that's why we go on the roller coaster, because Kings fans are ready to, all right, here we go, another winning streak like last year. We're going to take off. And instead it's like, oh, where did that come from at home when you're in an opportunity here, a part of the schedule, to take advantage of very winnable games? And they didn't do it. And I know you know that they looked bad last night. They looked flat. They looked uninspired. It was, in the words of the coach, alarming. And as a fan, it's maybe you don't get upset, but it's at the very least confusing.
This team is consistently inconsistent.
Yeah.
And I think we said it a couple of weeks ago. I think we said it last month. Like, this is what it's going to be with this Sacramento
Kings team. I think you're right. That's it.
And so we can either react to it like that every game and go through the roll, or we can say, you know what? I need to wait and see. When all 82 is settled, the dust is settled, Whitey, and they're the sixth seed, and they're a game behind the Pelicans, then I can look back, dang, that January 2nd loss against Charlotte. We should have had that one. We could have been a top four seed. But I need to see it play out. Like I said, I'm looking at the NBA standings right now. Sacramento's, let me do the math, 3.5 games out of the third spot, 4 games out of the second spot. Now, conversely, like you said earlier, you know, they're 3.5 games out of being out of the play-in tournament, the 11th spot. And so, yes, but I'm gonna let it all play out, because just like this team has some bad losses, Portland last night, Pelicans, whatever you want to bring up, they can go on a run also. And so if they beat Orlando tonight, if they beat Toronto Friday, if they beat the Pelicans on Sunday – and go 3-1 on his homestand, I think we would take that. I think we'd be okay with
that. Nice.
And yes, it was a bad loss. But we also sat on this show yesterday and said Charlotte has NBA players as well.
Mm-hmm.
Bridges can get buckets. P.J. Washington dropped 28 last year against us. We know Terry Rozier has started on playoff teams in Boston before, scored big points in playoffs before. I know what he's capable of. And so as much as we're frustrated right now by what we saw from the Sacramento Kings, I get it. It's just one game.
Here's
De'Aaron Fox said after. Are we going to play De'Aaron Fox sound?
Sure.
Jay and Nate, we're going to have to get De'Aaron Fox sound for later. All right,
yeah.
You got me. Because De'Aaron Fox was asked yesterday about, you know, how long do you think about this one?
Right.
And he had an interesting answer. And we'll get into that coming up.
I wasn't
in a little
crazy
bit.
About the answer.
I know. And I want to ask.
I get
you on that.
Here's where I'd agree with you. Pardon me. But,
yeah,
you said, are they the team that destroyed Memphis or are they the team that we saw last night? The answer is yes. Right. That's who they are.
Right.
And until and unless they make a change, that's the way it's going to be. I know that I'm a little disappointed because I thought that perhaps some of the changes they'd made in the rotation, in the lineup, in the last couple of games, thought, all right, maybe that will address that. Maybe they will not be as inconsistent. But they still were. So it's frustrating when you want to see this team take off and improve on what they did last year. It was a really bad, 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 bad loss last night.
Yeah, and I hear you, and I understand that. But one thing we got to remember about an NBA season, it's a journey. It's not how you are on January 3rd is not maybe how you'll be April 4th or something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's going to be some peaks and valleys, some ups and downs. Ultimately, it's about being your best when it matters the most. And the Kings still have tons of time to straighten things out. I actually thought the starting lineup was A-OK yesterday. The starting lineup was not the problem. So don't come at me with Chris Duarte nonsense today, Kings fans. What happened was
the
bench unit came in and fumbled the bag. And we're going to talk about that, of course, coming up in just a little bit. Am I frustrated? Yes. But I know they have an opportunity to right yesterday's wrong by coming out and handling business tonight.
One of the big problems here, and we'll take a quick time out, we got Drape's takes coming up. You know, last year, long story short, last year the five starters were really rock solid. Keegan, in his rookie year, made more threes than any rookie ever. You had Fox, you had Sabonis, and they were all league.
Yep.
And you had Herter last year was rock solid, and Harrison Barnes last year was rock solid. Those two guys this year, they've fallen off a little bit. It happens. They're nowhere near as consistent as they were last year. And no one really, there's been a little, Fox has improved. There's been improvement here or there. But the team is struggling to be as consistent, especially in the starting lineup, as they were last year. And nobody yet from the bench has really stepped up. So it's hard for the team to be better than they were last year. They're still looking for those answers.
Yeah. They're still looking for some answers. Still some question marks regarding this squad. Obviously, you would hope that wouldn't be the case. But, you know, you bring in some new pieces. Some guys haven't worked out yet. You know, to your point, some guys have regressed from what they did last season, and that's an issue. But, you know, that was an issue before last night. You know what I mean? Like, that's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what happened last night does not change my mind one way or the other about what needs to be done, what moves needs to be made, or anything like that. They are who they are, a wildly inconsistent team right now.
And I think bottom line for a lot of Kings fans, they would hope that, the team's been inconsistent, but still, this team's good enough to beat Charlotte. Even on an off night, they should beat Charlotte. Didn't happen, so onward, and hopefully upward tonight against Orlando. And we've got Drape's takes after whatever that was last night. We come right back with those from the Golden 1 Center. Next, it's a Drive Guy Sector. Thanks for being with us. For those of you with us on YouTube, I know there was a problem, but I think we have it fixed. No more echo.
That's pretty good.
So, sorry about that. We got that squared away as we get ready for the Kings in Orlando tonight. I'm looking forward to this game because I haven't seen Orlando play a lot, and they're a fun team.
They are. They're a fun team. They're better defensively than people think. They're a top five defensive team as well. They got some length. You know, with Franz Wagner, you got Paolo Banchero. They got some toughness at the guard position. So this is going to be an interesting matchup tonight. And exciting. They're 19-13, I think it is, or 19-14, something like that. And the Kings are 19-13. So it's going to be a tough test tonight.
They sure got a lot of lottery picks on that roster, huh?
Right. You know, and they've seemed to hit on them. I mean, you look at, obviously, Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner. I like Jalen Suggs. He sort of brings a toughness. We won't see Markelle Fultz tonight, but when Markelle Fultz has been playing in Orlando, he's been really solid for them. They got Anthony Black, a young rookie, didn't have a good game last night against Golden State, but he's been solid. Cole Anthony off the bench has, you know, he's in that sixth man of the year conversation. And then Jamal Mosley, the head coach, one of the best young coaches out there. And so this should be a fun game tonight to watch. More enjoyable. Last night was kind of a slog fest. You know, it never felt good, really. You know, we had the lead and, you know, it was okay, but you never felt like you were being entertained. I think you'll be entertained tonight.
I think you'll be entertained right now. Buckle up. It's time for Drape's Takes.
Calm down, Lion. Calm down. Take it easy, man. Just take it easy.
All right, Kings fans, I've had about, 30 hours to sit on this one to digest what took place last night.
Tell us.
First of all, my first takeaway from last night is the Sacramento Kings are at times too cool. And let me explain what I mean by too cool. They think they're the Denver Nuggets. They think they're the Boston Celtics. They think they're the Minnesota Timberwolves. They think they're OKC, that they could just show up and, you know what, we're going to win this game because we're the Sacramento Kings. You haven't reached that level yet. And that's what happened last night. It was a glorified scrimmage out there. You know what? You let another team, Charlotte, get comfortable. We've seen it before. We saw it last week in Portland. I said this before on this show, Whitey, and I'm going to say it again. And this is for everybody out there. Kings fans, young basketball players, people in your job, whatever. Rick Pitino used to say you got to have your PhD. You got to remain poor, hungry, and driven. And I don't see that from the Sacramento Kings. It feels like they get on a nice couple of game win streak, and then they start feeling good about themselves, believe in their press clippings, and then they relax. They don't seem hungry at times, at least last night. They don't seem driven at times. Is that a coach problem? Is that a player problem? I don't know. But if this team is going to make a deep run in the postseason, they got to fix it. They got to have their PhD. They got to act like they have not accomplished a single thing yet, and we haven't seen it. They got to stay poor, hungry, and driven, Whitey.
Yeah, I think sometimes a lot of that has to do with a lack of athleticism. If the other team is longer, stronger, faster than you, sometimes it looks like you're not trying. I think that may be part of what's going on at times with the Kings, but we may know more about that tonight.
All right, second Drape's take, and it's going to the bench. I thought the starters were fine. I understand Harrison Barnes only had 3 points, only took 2 shots in 23 minutes. We can have the Harrison Barnes discussion day in and day out. It's going to be like the season.
You'd love
it's
that,
be,
wouldn't you?
No, it's going to be a roller coaster. I'm done having the Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes could go 0-for-0 with zeros across the board. I don't care. But I need Malik Monk to be better than what he was last night, 6 points. I need, more from Kevin Huerter off the bench. Like I said at the beginning of the season, I thought this bench had the potential to be the best bench in the entire NBA. It has not shaped up to be that way. In fact, the team we'll see tonight, the Orlando Magic, I believe, in terms of scoring, has the best bench in the association. And so that's where I thought last year we also had an advantage. Our starters were great, but we had a guy like Terrence Davis who would come in maybe once every 20 games. But, man, when he came in and played well, he could get you 20 or 30 points. Outside of Malik Monk and maybe Trey Lyles as of late, our bench right now is kind of thin. Like, hopefully Kevin Huerter can develop into that guy, but we need more firepower off the bench.
Yeah, Mike Brown was unhappy last night, not only with the results he was getting from the guys off the bench, but the way they were playing, very casual. I'm sure we'll talk more about that. He was talking about underhand passes.
Yeah.
But, it's still an issue with this team. Fox isn't on the floor. They struggle.
We both aren't big plus-minus guys, right?
Not in a game.
Malik Monk, a minus 21 last night.
Not great.
Like, by far the worst on the team. Second worst, Keegan Murray, a minus 8. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not plus-minus people, but looking at that's jarring to me because Malik has been fantastic this season. Last night, not a good night for Malik Monk. My third and final Drape's take. I know I've been tough on this guy. I know I've been difficult on them. I've been hard on them. Everybody wants to go out there and make a trade. Go get Pascal. Go get Zach. The answer to our issues is right here, and he's our number four overall pick, Keegan Murray. I need Keegan to be better. I just need him to be better. If we're talking about getting to where we want to go, Kings fans, Monty can make moves. Mike Brown can shake up the lineup. But we talk about Harrison Barnes. We talk about Kevin Huerter. He has been sort of up and down as well. And so I need some consistency from him. I know it's tough. Second-year player, you know, coming in with Domas and Fox. They're the, you know, veterans. It's their team. But, man, if Keegan could be more consistent, give me 15, 16, 17, 18 to 20 every single night, mark it down. And don't tell me Drapes, well, he's averaging 15 points. You know what an average is. If I score 31 game and zero the second game, what's my points per game, Whitey? 15 points per game. Yeah. Does that mean exactly? I need Keegan to be more consistent. He's our answer. That's the guy. He is our answer. That's why we're not going to make any major moves at the trade deadline, because of our belief in Keegan Murray.
I think you're right. I think, you know, it's not just opinion. I think that's clearly the way they have this all set up. I think that's one of the points that Jay was making yesterday when we talked about Keegan. Can I add one more? May I do a bonus take?
No, but you can't call it a Drapes take, though. You got to call it a
Whitey's wondering.
Right? All right, what you got?
I'm wondering why the Kings can't make a free throw.
That's a great question.
10 of 17 last night. You look at the NBA free throw stats.
Yeah.
They're last in the NBA. This is supposed to be a good shooting team, right?
It was an issue to start last season as well. And I don't get it. You know, I understand De'Aaron Fox. He's at 73%, I think, this season so far. But the dude is shooting the three impeccably. You would think. All right, get it up to 78. And then Domantas Sabonis. Where's he been at from the free throw line?
I don't know about you. That's one of the things I look at with a young player. Is he a good shooter? Well, let's see. How does he shoot his free throws, or she? You know, typically, they're a good foul shooter. They could be a good shooter. And the Kings, bad foul shooting. Really bad. Last in the league. And last night, that was a very close game. You know, free throws vitally important. I know Mike Brown mentioned it. It's, again, it's a puzzler. He was upset because that's one of those controllables, as he said it. You can control how many free throws you make, and the Kings are not making enough of
them. They're not making. I mean, 58.8% last night. You know, you hit five more of those. You go 15 of 17, you know, then you're talking a 111-109 game. It could go anywhere down the stretch. And you're right about that. Their free throws got to improve. I do want to go back to Keegan Murray, and I want to have this discussion. And I just remembered this. Matt Barnes on the postgame show said regarding Keegan Murray, we're asking so much of him on a defensive end that it's taken away offensively. But he says it's a conditioning issue. Not that Keegan's in bad shape or anything like that, but to be an elite two-way player, you got to be not in just great, you got to be in the best condition of your life. And so, you know, and that's one issue that Matt Barnes brought up yesterday. And I hadn't thought about that. You know, it's like he's expending so much energy on one end that if he gets more in better condition, then he can be a Klay Thompson in his heyday, how Klay Thompson was. Especially, Matt was saying, because you're a perimeter player, you know, and you're running around, you use your legs on jump shots and all that. And I'm not saying it's an issue, but could that be the reason that Keegan is, you know, having some ups and downs?
Obviously, this isn't something Keegan has said. It's something Matt Barnes is saying about him. But we've heard Davion Mitchell talk about that. We've heard Huerter talk about that. I don't remember any team ever, in my memory, obviously, talking about that. Well, it's hard to play offense when we're playing so hard on defense, and it's a recurring theme with this team for some reason. That's curious.
And maybe it's a case of this team having to learn what it takes to be a champion.
Yeah.
You know, what worked in the past, what worked even last year, that's not going to be good enough this year.
Not if you want to get better.
If you want to get better, exactly. And kudos to De'Aaron Fox. He clearly went out there and put in the work. He talked about his workouts with Steph Curry. We know Steph Curry, one of the best conditioned athletes in the league, because he's in constant motion. And then in the fourth quarter, he still has enough gas with his jump shot. And so maybe conditioning could improve this team.
Speaking of De'Aaron Fox, on to something a little more pleasant. De'Aaron Fox named by The Ringer yesterday, one of eight players in the league who has leveled up. The guy who wrote that piece, Michael Pina, joins us next to talk about this year's rise of De'Aaron Fox. Draper and Whitey got that for you from Golden 1 Center next right here on Sacktown. Yeah, last night's over with, right, Kyle?
Yeah.
Forget about it, right? What do you think about it? Look forward to tonight. I really am looking forward to tonight's game. Orlando Magic. Should be fun.
This is a good team, a fun team, some young talent.
Yeah.
This is, as a lot of people think, you know, they're Sacramento of last year. Like, they who were the Kings were a season ago. Young had missed the playoffs, and now, you know, exciting, like, league pass must watch.
Yeah. Well, yesterday we talked about the fact that the Kings got some national love from The Ringer, and so we thought we'd be talking about that under more pleasant circumstances, but that's okay. Nice enough to join us, senior staff writer from The Ringer, prepared a piece that was posted yesterday on eight players in the NBA who have leveled up, led by De'Aaron Fox at the top of the list. Michael Pina joins us. Michael, how are you? Happy New Year. Thanks for your time.
Happy New Year, guys. How you doing?
We're doing all right. You know, we were doing better this time yesterday before that loss to Charlotte. But, you know, it happens. What Michael, has impressed you the most about De'Aaron's play and his improvement this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be the three-point shot, right? Like, when De'Aaron Fox first entered the NBA, that was kind of the one great shortcoming in his offensive skill set. And, you know, he was one of the fastest players coming out of college, could get to the basket at will. He could run a really capable pick and roll. He was just an absolute phenom in transition. And for him now to have evolved to this level where he's one of the more potent pull-up three-point shooters in the entire NBA, and to have made the leap that he did statistically from even just last season, it's just a really fascinating evolution that completely changes, in my opinion, you know, his trajectory as a player, as a potential MVP candidate someday. And just kind of a run-of-the-mill all-star. I think the three-point shot for him has just really opened up a lot individually and for Sacramento's offense.
Yeah, Michael. And you know, before the season, Whitey and I had talked about what we wanted to see from De'Aaron Fox. I think we said maybe 4 to 5 3 attempts per game because he's so elite at getting into the paint, getting to the basket and scoring around the basket. He's at 9 shot attempts, 9 three-point attempts per game. And so when you look at the number of attempts that he puts up, are you okay with that? Has he reached that status now? I know the results say yes, he's a 40% three-point shooter, but you mentioned how fascinating and remarkable it is, not that he's just hitting them, but the sheer amount that he's taking so far this season.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what you want from your point guard in today's NBA. I mean, it's definitely an analytically friendly shot chart. You know, he's cut his long twos literally in half in terms of long two shooting rate from last season. And to go from 27-28% of his shots were threes last year to almost 40% or just above 40% are threes this year, I think it's fantastic. I mean, obviously, it's relatively early in the year. And if he's able to kind of continue to make 40% of his pull-up threes off the dribble, I mean, then that's scary. Not a lot of guys who can shoot at a high volume that accurate. I mean, that's like literally, that's Steph Curry, Damian Lillard status. Yeah. And he's hunting them. I mean, he doesn't take bad attempts. I mean, last night in the Charlotte game, I thought that most of the threes he took were really good looks, hunting in transition, a lot of catch and shoot looks. And in the pick and roll, too, if you're drop back, the biggest drop back, he is not hesitating to just let it fly, and he's just playing with a lot of confidence. So I think it's a good thing that he's up the volume from behind the three-point line.
Michael Pina is with us from The Ringer, senior staff writer, just wrote a great piece on, among others, De'Aaron Fox. This may be a leading question, Michael, but you mentioned that De'Aaron Fox's play should be getting more attention. Why do you think it isn't getting more attention?
That's a really good question. You know, before I even set out to write the story, I kind of, I mean, I look at the standings every day. I'm really familiar with the league, of course, but I just didn't even realize that the Sacramento Kings were, you know, not comfortably out of the play-in, but, you know, pretty close to the fourth. I mean, the four seed, five seed right now.
Yep.
So it's kind of, it's curious to me a little bit because they had such success last year, making the playoffs, obviously, and being very competitive in that first round series against the Golden State Warriors. And, you know, their defense, I think, has really improved this season compared to last year. But I don't know why there isn't a lot of excitement around the Kings. I think potentially it's just because they didn't make a lot of flashy offseason moves, and it's essentially the same roster as last year. That could be an explanation. But they're a more balanced team, and I love Domas Sabonis. He's one of my favorite players to watch. He made an All-NBA team last year, and he's one of the more underrated centers in basketball. So, yeah, it's a good question. I couldn't answer why they're not getting a little bit more buzz, a little bit more attention, but his numbers are kind of jaw-dropping. I mean, 30 points per game with the fourth highest usage, I believe it is right now in the entire NBA. That's superstar stuff.
Michael Pina joining us from The Ringer. It's interesting, Michael, you brought up Domantas Sabonis, and there are some colleagues of yours, Kevin O'Connor, who let's say, who views Domas as maybe a potentially person holding the Kings back from reaching their full potential. What do you like about Domas, and what do you think of him as a starting center on a championship-caliber team?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of bigs who are just dominant in the post, but can also see the court with elite vision. And so Domas, you know, he's kind of the only big who's a better passer, in my opinion, is Nikola Jokic, who's like the greatest passing big man in the history of basketball. So, I mean, it's just that's kind of a tough comparison. But
yeah,
Domas is super, super efficient with his back to the basket. Always able to draw double teams, really effective on the perimeter in the DHO game with guys like Kevin Huerter, who I know just moved to the bench, but Chris Duarte and Fox as well, Malik Monk, et cetera. So he really frees guys up for open looks, and he's a big reason why their offense hums. I know that the rationale for him potentially capping the Kings is on the other side of the ball, but I think that there's just ways you can scheme around that with other personnel. Obviously the Denver Nuggets winning the championship is the comp that you want there, where you kind of get guys like KCP and you get Aaron Gordon and just elite perimeter defenders, big size around him that can help. That's the pass, but crazier things have happened. I wouldn't rule that out entirely. I wouldn't rule a deep playoff run out just because Domantas Sabonis is on your team. I think he's just an amazing offensive player.
Catching up with Michael Pina from The Ringer. I'm not comparing De'Aaron to Michael Jordan, but I do remember when Michael no, I'm not. Bear with me here. I want to make sure we're clear.
Here it is.
When early in Michael's NBA career, a lot of people said, well, yeah, he's a great individual player, but he doesn't make his teammates better like Bird and Magic. And it wasn't until the Bulls had great success as a team that Michael was recognized as the great player that he is. So my question is, to what extent do you think De'Aaron's reputation or legacy hinges on how well ultimately this team becomes?
Yeah, I mean, I think that line of thinking applies to just about everybody, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. De'Aaron Fox has kind of been around the NBA for a really long time. And one of the premises of my article that I wrote is basically guys who have established reputations who are kind of bucking them right now and changing them. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you don't go to the playoffs, like nothing can change. I mean, you look at someone like Zach LaVine, he's just it's all stats, and that's kind of who he is right now as an NBA player. But, you know, you go to the playoffs and you have success. I thought that even though the Kings lost that series, they showed a lot of grit and a lot of heart, and I thought Fox played really well despite having a serious injury. So, you know, advancing this year, making the playoffs again in a really congested, competitive Western Conference. I do think he already makes his teammates better. I don't think there's any question about that. He's a really aware pick and roll ball handler who can make every pass and every read on the court. I don't think there's anything selfish about his game at all. So, I mean, it's just about winning. It's about being a little bit more balanced and getting some more help from the supporting cast. And, yeah, I think his reputation will absolutely change.
Michael, you know, when you look at the Western Conference, I look at the top, Minnesota, OKC, and the leaps that they made. What is separating them apart from Sacramento right now? What does Sacramento, what don't they have that they need right now to be in that elite Western Conference conversation?
I think it's, I mean, those two teams are like first and second or first and third in defense, like, right? Like elite defense, elite rim protection. And we just talked about Domantas Sabonis. There's not that that's like the only way that you can win, but I think just when I'm comparing the Sacramento Kings with those two teams in particular, they can beat you in a lot of different ways in terms of their defensive versatility. They've got a lot of size, got a lot of length, really good rebounding team. And I know that the Sacramento Kings are one of the better defensive rebounding teams in the league this season, which is really encouraging to see. That's a big component of winning. But that's, I mean, consistent night in, night out, really raising your floor as a team, having an elite defense really does that for you. So I think that that would be the biggest separator between those two and the Kings right now.
Well, speaking of very encouraging, if you're a Kings fan, if you haven't already, check out Michael's piece at The Ringer. I think you'll find it very encouraging. Michael, we appreciate your time very, very much. Thanks. Very nice piece. We hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, Michael. Thanks, man.
How about that? There's somebody from The Ringer. We had been told that The Ringer did frowns on people coming on, and Jay got him on.
Just
like
that. And
yeah,
I texted Kevin O'Connor. I'm like, when you coming on the show? We got Michael Pena on right now. What's your excuse?
He might not be your boy, just saying.
No, you know, he ducking the smoke. That's what
that is, man.
If I was working in Boston right now, he'd jump on in a heartbeat. Ah. You know he's public enemy number one here in Sacramento. He's scared of that smoke.
We can help him with that.
That's what, right? I'm trying to tell
we
him.
We can help turn that around.
This is a safe space, you know?
Uh-huh. Speaking of trades and things of that nature, as we so often are now with these Kings, when we come back, we've got today an NBA trade talk. Which member of the Jazz is the subject of the most trade conversation? We have the surprising answer to that and a Siakam update as well when we come right back to the Golden One set. Got a trivia question for you. You like trivia questions? All right.
Throw my mic. Yeah, I love trivia questions.
I only know this because I saw it somewhere, so I'm not trying to be, I know this, you know it. I just happened to see it somewhere. It's how I know it. I would not have gotten this right.
Just claim it.
Yeah, I do this. It's easy. There are five NBA players this season who are averaging a triple-double per 100 possessions. Mm. How many do you think you could name? There are five NBA players this season who are averaging a triple-double per 100 possessions.
I think I could name... This is tough. I'd say three I can name.
Okay.
Oh, you want me? Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Jokic.
That is correct. Well done.
Sabonis.
That is correct. Well done.
This is where it starts getting difficult right here. I would say Shai Gilgeous.
Nope.
No?
Good guess. There's two guys on there you could get. There's one guy, and that's why I'm asking. There's one guy's like, wait, what? The other two, you want me to tell you?
Yeah. What you got?
Okay. Jokic and Sabonis, correct. Triple doubles for 100 possessions. Also, LeBron James.
Okay, yep, I get
and
that.
And Luka.
Yep, okay, yes.
The fifth, and I mention him because apparently there's a lot of interest in him potentially on the trade market, Kelly Olynyk.
The clinic?
Yes.
Kelly Olynyk?
Yes.
Wow.
He is averaging a triple double per 100 possessions. Obviously, he's piling up the assists this year. From our sister station, KSL Sports, Ben Anderson says, I've been told that Kelly Olynyk has had the most robust trade market among teams calling the Jazz to see who is available. So we all assume that, everyone wants Lauri Markkanen. I don't know that Utah has any interest in trading Lauri Markkanen, but a lot of teams are calling about Kelly Olynyk. Don't think he's a good fit here, but...
You don't? I think he would be an excellent fit here. Oh,
really?
My gosh. I love Kelly Olynyk. Kelly Olynyk is a winner, first of all.
No question. He's a winner.
He, you know, was on, you know, teams in Boston that went deep in the playoffs. helped Team Canada. You could ask Jordy Fernandez about Kelly Olynyk. Helped Team Canada at the FIBA World Cup. Elite passer, elite mover of the ball. You know, a lot of times we talk about, oh, the ball sticks, or, you know, they don't play with pace. Well, Kelly Olynyk plays with pace.
Yes. I mean,
he is a guy that moves the ball, moves without the ball.
I just feel like I already have a big who does that. That's why I say
I'm not saying as a starter, but as a bench guy, another bench guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about this, because a lot of people are talking about Trey Lyles needs to be starting at the four. Let's say Trey Lyles is your starting four. Who's your bench for, you know, if Harrison Barnes is here or not? Like, Kelly Olynyk would be a great coming off the bench for the Sacramento Kings.
And he's coming off the bench now. He's averaging 8 points, about 5.5 rebounds, and a little under 5 assists, 55% from the floor shooting. He's making his threes at 41%. He's on an expiring contract of just more than $12 million. So
that's
maybe there's a guy
Kelly
to keep an eye on. It's just apparently there are a lot of teams keeping an eye on Kelly Olynyk, which gets us back to that old question with the Kings. Well, how can they put together a competitive offer?
Right. What would you have to give up? But if I'm Sacramento, if Boston's interested, if Miami, if the Lakers, if the Heat, all those teams are interested, all those are championship contenders, mind you, should we be interested too? You know, especially at $12 million a year. The thing about Kelly Olynyk that I love is his basketball IQ. You know, and some people say, well, he doesn't play great defense. He actually plays some pretty solid positional defense. He's not going to lock anybody there down, but team defense, and he's a great communicator. I could see him getting into coaching at some point once his playing days are over. Kelly, I'm a big fan of Kelly Olynyk.
You'd see him coming off the bench here. How would that fit? And I'm not saying it wouldn't. How would that fit, say, with Trey coming off the bench? Another
You know, if Kelly Olynyk is here, you would probably have to trade somebody in that position. And so maybe Trey becomes the starter and Kelly Olynyk comes off the bench. Maybe Kelly Olynyk becomes the starter and Trey comes off the bench. I don't know. The problem is, and you know, our guy Beamer Beams or Beamly weighing in on the YouTube chat. I urge people, let me know what you think about Kelly Olynyk, 916-339-1140. The problem with all the guys we're throwing out there, there's question marks regarding everybody. Contract, doesn't play defense, one shot. Like, is there a perfect solution? Maybe we saw it in the guy P.J. Washington yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, but does P.J. Washington immediately come here and start at the four? What about Trey Lyles? You know, and so there's some question marks, but I think Kelly Olynyk is fantastic.
The thing I don't like about P.J. Washington, and I mention this only because, you know, we saw him last night and you bring him up. He just got paid, right, and his numbers have gone down. And bless him. Good for him. But I just, I'm anxious to hitch my wagon to anybody who gets the bag and then they're not playing as well, right? Because it's like, well.
No, hold on, what are we talking about, Whitey? This is the problem, and I hear you. I get it. I don't know if P.J. Washington is that guy, got paid, and all of a sudden his game, you know, we got to understand.
I don't either, but I don't want to assume that risk. I mean, it's true. That has happened. Maybe that's not the reason, but there's a risk there.
But maybe his role is different.
Maybe.
You know, maybe the coaching staff wants to go in a different direction. Maybe he needs a fresh start in a different environment. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But that's, you know, there's question marks regarding everyone. Pascal Siakam, great player. I love Pascal. But his contract's up.
Right.
You know, can you resign? So there's question marks. Like, if we're talking about making a trade, I think the Kings are going to have to assume some risk with whatever direction they decide to go. You're risking whether it's re-signing a player, will they fit, do they play defense? Like, there's no perfect candidate out there.
Do you want a Siakam update?
Yeah, what you got?
Not on any teams or anything, but this might make him less desirable. Siakam, as a free agent.
Who's that in the background? Is that Nate?
I think I hear Nate.
Nate, be quiet. All right, go ahead. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Siakam, as a free agent, he can sign up to a four-year extension, okay? And he's scheduled to become an unrestricted free agent. If he's traded, let's say he gets traded, let's just say the Kings.
Yeah.
If he got traded to the Kings, he could only sign a two-year extension with the Kings, whoever he's traded to.
Really?
If it's like, let's bring him in and sign up to an extension, according to Mark Stein, he could only sign initially a two-year extension. Then once he's a free agent, which would be when the season's over, he could sign the 4-year
with
anybody.
Yeah, all right.
So the risk is like, okay, we'll bring you here. We know you're not going to sign right away because why would you? And we're just going to hope that you sign the 4-year when the season's
over. Yeah, you got to take some risk, right?
Big risk.
Yeah. We hope that he's forthcoming, he's open and honest about his plans.
That might actually lower the asking price for him because of the risk involved. Maybe that gives a chance for the Kings to get back in it if they're...
If I'm Siakam, and I'm being 100% real, I'm becoming a free agent no matter what.
Yeah, I think
no matter who I'm traded to, uh-huh. I'm not going to sign no extension. I'm going to hit the open market and see what I can get.
And apparently that's what teams understand, right. And that's what he has made, for the most part, clear.
Yeah.
And according to Mark Stein, contenders for Siakam, or at least teams that are interested, the Hawks, the Pacers, the Kings, maybe Dallas, maybe Memphis. Atlanta's interesting because, wait a minute, what are they – are they trading away their stars? They want to trade Murray, but they still want to get a star.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting situation there. Indy is kind of like the Kings, right? But it looks like all the things we say about the Kings, that's too risky. It appears that Indiana's like, that's fine.
That's
fine. We will assume that risk.
Because I think you look at Indiana, they don't have a big two yet. It's Tyrese Halliburton and then sort of everybody else. Sacramento, you have your big two, maybe your big three with Keegan. And so you need somebody to add to that.
Yeah.
I think the Pacers are looking for a second star, a second player to play alongside Tyrese Halliburton.
Yeah, and they want it now, and they're not concerned about next year.
Exactly.
When we come back, more trade talk here with the trade winds starting to swirl around the NBA. And after last night, help me, brother, for I have lost faith from the Golden One Center to Drive Guys on Sackdown Sports.